Inside Chicago government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews about and sounds of Chicago government. I'm Dave Gloetz. In this episode, we'll hear excerpts from the July 2020 City Council meeting, in which aldermen talked a bunch about housing and real estate issues, particularly issues around new tenant protections and a historical landmark district on the south side. Plus, we'll hear aldermen say kind words about a departing mayoral staffer. All this happened in the context of my interview with the host of the Ben Jarofsky Show. Here's the episode.
Young Dave Gloetz has joined me for another scintillating analysis of the Chicago City Council. And I say this with all due respect and admiration and love for young David Gloetz, a total geek when it comes to Chicago city government. He takes the deep dive. He's not afraid to understand what TIFs are. He's not afraid to pick apart a budget. And he's not afraid to sit through hours of city council meetings.
Fear is one of the least things one has to worry about sitting through city council meetings.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes it gets a little tedious at the outset, but once they kick into gear, it's very interesting and fascinating, and it shows you how your city operates. So with no further ado, I turn it over to you, Dave, and talk about the city council meeting that took place last Wednesday. Am I correct about that?
It was July 22, started at 10 a.m., and it was a video conference meeting. I don't know if or when we'll see live meetings again in the council chamber. I know that other cities have reverted to that, but, you know, we got a lot of aldermen. We got 50 of them. It's hard to pack them in that room.
Yeah, they probably have to move it to, like, an arena.
Wintrust Arena. Why not?
Built with public dollars.
What
the hell?
We paid for it. I don't know. Anyway, this council meeting lasted about 4 hours, a little shy of 4 hours. That's been about average recently. And later on, we'll get into why it could have been a little shorter. But one of the first things I want to talk about is a rather controversial ordinance that was passed by the council. And it passed 35-14. As we've spoken of in the past, Ben, that is for this city council, a rather lopsided vote. The ordinance that we're going to be talking about is referred to as the Fair Notice Ordinance. For those keeping score at home, that's SO2020-2862. And this applies to the notice that landlords must give tenants when they're asking tenants to leave their apartment. Up until this ordinance was passed, that amount of notice was 30 days flat for all tenants. After this ordinance was passed, it's the same for tenants who have been living in their apartment for 6 months or less. But what has changed, if one has lived in one's apartment more than 6 months and 3 years or less, then the notice has been boosted to 60 days. And the thinking is that there's a lot of people who are really hurting financially now during the pandemic, and it's hard for people to find the money to continue to find places to live when landlords want to kick him out. There's one more provision that if one has been living in one's apartment for more than 3 years, the notice is boosted to 120 days or 4 months. So that's kind of what's been controversial about that. We're going to listen to a couple clips. These are compendiums that I've put together. I'm going to spoil this for everyone. The first set of clips is going to be from aldermen who were opposing this ordinance, and then we're going to listen to a round of aldermen who were arguing for the ordinance. And let's listen first to the alderman opposed.
Item number 7 is a substitute ordinance, which is known as the Fair Notice Ordinance, which extends notice that landlords must provide tenants when increasing rent or for non-renewal of leases.
Alderman Lopez.
I am concerned because this places yet another undue burden on the small unit owners. They own the 2 flats and 3 flats. Landlords who are not big developers. We are shifting the burden on individuals who are in no position to afford carrying a greater burden when their renters do not meet their obligations. We are exacerbating a crisis for the owners. We will have a foreclosure crisis on these units if we continue with policies like this that do not incorporate some sort of relief for those small unit building owners.
Alderman Spezzato.
We're just destroying the small guy. If they get a bad tenant in there, it not only hurts them, it hurts the other two or three or whatever amount of people that are in that building. There's a thing out there called cash for keys. My dismay, I guess a lot of my colleagues never heard of that, but cash for keys is you get these bad tenants, it takes you forever to get rid of them. So you'll give them money. You'll say, here's $5,000, here's $10,000. Just leave. This way you don't have to worry about them destroying the place or losing even more rent for 6 months, 9 months further.
Alderman Riley.
This is one of those not so regular occasions where I do agree with Alderman Ray Lopez. I also have a number of residents in my ward who have a studio apartment that they rent out as an income property. These are not multimillionaires driving around in Rolls Royces. These are regular working people that were able to sock away savings to buy an investment property like a studio or a one bedroom without recognizing the mortgage obligations many of these small landlords have. We could inadvertently be forcing foreclosures on folks that are otherwise providing space for tenants to live.
Alderman Hopkins.
I agree, 30 days is not enough. That is unconscionable. That's not enough notice. But 120 days is excessive. It is too long. A compromise of 90 days was presented for this. That is reasonable. That is appropriate. And if we were talking about that, I would be in support of this, but we're not. 120 days is excessive, and this is not fair and balanced, and I will be voting no.
Alderman Dowell.
90 days notice instead of 120 days notice to any tenant is more than sufficient. And I think that adding 120 days to this ordinance is unreasonable.
Alderman Cardenas.
I'm going to be voting yes, but I'll be the first one to start rescinding if we see patterns of abuse. And I'll be able to see that because people are going to come by me asking help and evicting people that are abusing this practice.
So just to sum up, there are basically two arguments that we heard. One is that the owners of small buildings, like two flats or three flats, might be jeopardized because they don't have a lot of income. And if they can't get a non-paying tenant out of there quickly, like in 30 days, then they might be screwed financially. And the other argument that we heard is that giving somebody 4 months is just like, well, that's crazy talk. So what do you think of that, Ben?
Well, I'd love to hear the other side before I launch into my reactions, other than to say this. I've been following the city council for a long time, and the more I hear these debates, the more they echo debates that have been going on in the city council forever. Every time there's any kind of ordinance that's intended to protect renters, invariably, some alderman will get up to declare his or her support for small apartment owners in that, you know, like the two flats and the ma and the pa's. And they're never looking out for like the big time corporations that own apartments all over the city. Dave, you ever notice that? I'm really looking out for just the bungalow guy, you know, as the person upstairs. And I listen to Ray Lopez and Nick Spezzato and Pat Dowell. I'm like, oh my God, Bernie Stone, you live, Bert Nateris. That was my initial thought, was how much has remained the same in the city of Chicago.
And we're going to hear maybe that some of their arguments don't really hold water. And let's hear from the aldermen who say that they were for this.
Alderman Sitcho Lopez.
Precisely what Alderman Lopez is mentioning was one of the issues that we agree on, to make sure that we have a working group so that we can differentiate the small homeowners versus the big developers. We have a commitment from the housing chair to make sure that we have a working group to discuss precisely that. How are we going to ensure that we don't put extra burden on small homeowners? This ordinance in particular, what it does is to do something that is common sense. We right now, when we face a huge crisis, an unprecedented situation where we can be facing thousands of evictions that are being filed right now, this is not about pitching tenants against homeowners. This is about drafting good policy to make sure that we prevent the harshest thing that we can experience as a community, that is evictions.
Alderman Ramirez Rosa.
We have to understand that because of the high rents that tenants pay all across the city, landlords have been able to keep up with rising property taxes, have been able to keep up with the maintenance of their buildings. And so this is an ecosystem where tenants are necessary and tenants are key for the survival and for the thriving nature of our neighborhoods.
Alderwoman Rodriguez Sanchez.
I want to say that this is the bare minimum that we can do right now in this moment when we are facing possibly mass evictions in our city. I also want to say that the assumption that tenants are acting on bad faith is very disingenuous. In my experience, in my office, we have had so many people calling us trying to figure out how they can get the resources to be able to pay their rent. People want to be able to pay their rent.
Alderman Lozada.
We know in an average year, we see 23,000 evictions filed in the city of Chicago. 60% of those result in eviction orders. 79% of landlords have attorneys, as opposed to only 11% of their tenants. That is in an average year. And we are heading into, we are in the middle of anything but an average year.
Alderman King.
I just want to correct some of the misconception on what this ordinance is. So first of all those folks were talking about small units, 2 and 3 flats. This ordinance exempts those units from the right to cure. This ordinance really only gives those residents who have been living in a building for years more time if a landlord decides not to renew their leases. Something, you know, that I've seen in my ward, literally, where I had mayor, a pastor that we both know, mother, given 30 days to leave their home that they've known for years. She had Alzheimer's. Landlords will still have the ability to, you know, in the first year and second year and third year, if they find a tenant to be not a good tenant, they will have all the recourses that they've already had.
I had a feeling, Sophia King, I would like to start with her.
It's a very important point that she made.
Yeah, I had a feeling that was the case, that there was an exemption. This just underscores the point I was making before. The same debates, they always exempt the mom-pa landlord. That's like standard in Chicago. What I was saying about Bernie Stone and Bert Nateris, may they rest in peace. Great adversaries. I enjoyed debating them. They would always do the same thing. In the case of Bert, he was so much sort of a representative of downtown commercial real estate interests. But he would never come out and say, you know, I'm looking out for the downtown landlord who hires Michael Madigan to handle his property taxes or Ed Burke to handle his property taxes. I'm looking out for, you know, Billy and Mary and they're too flat. And they're always exempted, but they're always getting looked out for. So, Dave, I've always thought this was a very disingenuous argument when it was advanced back in the 80s and the 90s on the part of machine aldermen who were standing up for the real estate industry. It's every bit as disingenuous today when I hear it advanced by, you know, Ray Lopez, who I love dearly, and my good friend Nick Sposato, and all the other ones who are saying they're looking out for the small business person.
Disingenuous perhaps is the wrong word. How about just incorrect? I have the ordinance right here.
Okay. Oh, I love it when you pull out the ordinance.
And it says, rental in the following dwelling units shall not be governed by this. And it says, dwelling units and owner-occupied premises containing 6 units or fewer. I mean, it says it right on the first page.
Yeah.
So my question for Alderman Lopez and Alderman Sposato and Alderman Riley, did they not read it? Or is there some other motivation, you know, if they did read it and they know that it doesn't apply to these small building owners? Now, to be fair, the ordinance applies only to owner-occupied buildings. So to Alderman Riley's point, one could have someone who owns a studio condo someplace that has an outstanding residential loan on it, and they could have a tenant who isn't paying rent. This ordinance would not protect that owner. But that isn't a point necessarily that any of the aldermen raised. So I'm wondering, what motivates them to make this argument?
I don't know. It's a great question. And I had Raylo on last week. I did not get a chance to ask him that. And it's the same question that could be applied to every single alderman who has ever stood up in the city council saying he or she is looking out for a group of people who are exempted from the ordinance that they presumably are defending them against? Are they just ignorant? Are they willfully ignorant? Are they serving this larger purpose? Like the real estate industry doesn't want any kind of provision passed in the Chicago City Council just as a matter of principle, because it's a slippery slope. You pass this and then you're going to ask for something else. So I can't answer your question. Now, I have a question for you. During the debate, did Lori Lightfoot, did Mayor Lightfoot step in at any point and correct the alderman? Because in the past, you've played exchanges where Lori Lightfoot would come in and say, you're wrong, or you got it wrong. You know what I mean? She would make an attempt to educate them. Was there anything like that in the exchanges at this last meeting?
She generally doesn't, I've noticed, like to do that. In fact, when she does that, she calls herself out and says things to the effect of, I don't normally inject myself into this thing, but I have to say something. In fact, we're going to hear something later just like that. She follows protocol, which is to allow the committee chairs to address, because these things are happening in the context, mind you, of committee reports.
Yeah.
And this particular committee is the Committee on Housing and Real Estate. Aptly named.
Who's the chair of this?
This is Alderman Harry Osterman of the 48th Ward. So, no, to answer your question, Mayor Lightfoot did not.
All right, so she picks and chooses when she intervenes. I don't know why she chose not to intervene here. I understand she doesn't want to do it, and she always apologizes when she does it, but as we're going to hear, she does it frequently.
Another thing that she allowed that we have heard in past city council wrap-ups that she has not been happy about is she allowed debate for this measure. In the past, you might recall that for one, Alderman Brian Hopkins of the Second Ward has said, you know, point of order, the time for such debate is during committee meetings. But this was the back and forth. I compiled the fors and againsts, but in the actual meeting, it was going back and forth. And of course, we heard Alderman King say, time out, folks, you're wrong about these small.
Well, I'll say this. I disagreed with the notion that you can't have debate. Remember when the last time we had this discussion?
Yeah.
So I'm glad they've, obviously they're listeners of our show, and they just said, you know, Ben and Dave were right. Let's allow some debate. Let me just point something out for listeners that longtime listeners of our show know, but I'll do it anyway. The mayor controls who is a chair of a committee. I know you're supposed to have a check and a balance, but the way it works in Chicago, the mayor essentially dictates who the committee chairs are. So the committee chairs are her loyalists. And as such, you're not going to get a bill out of committee in all likelihood that gets delivered by the committee to the council unless the mayor has already signed on to it. In all likelihood, there may be an exception that happens, in which case I'll be astounded. But you don't get to be the chair of a committee if you're an opponent of the mayor, or if you allow yourself to speak out against the mayor. So the fact that Harry Osterman introduces this, Dave, and that it's having debate means that the mayor has signed off on it already. And I would find it really unlikely that any mayor would allow such a measure to go through without an exemption for the so-called ma-and-pa landlords. You follow what I'm saying?
One more point about that is that a lot of the discussion, a lot of the comments by aldermen were to thank the mayor for allowing this to go through, because it was stalled for quite a while over this like 120-day provision. So this perhaps is an indication of the amount of behind-the-scenes work that so-called progressive aldermen did and the degree to which the mayoral administration, you know, did some give and take.
I'm going to make one last point that underscores all of this. We're going to see the same arguments, sort of arguments, in the fair tax proposal that is coming out. We're going to have a referendum. As voters, we get to determine whether to raise the income tax rates on the highest earners in the state of Illinois. And I guarantee you're already hearing it. The Chamber of Commerce, the anti-fair tax activists, proponents, if you will, are already saying they're doing this to protect tax increases on the middle class and working class. It's a replica of what we're hearing in this council debate. In fact, the fair tax will prevent tax hikes on working class and middle class people and put the burden on the wealthiest. But you can never argue, Dave, that, well, I'm standing up on behalf of the richest, wealthiest people in the state. No, no, no. You always have to hide behind the middle class. And that's exactly what my dear friends, Ray Lopez and Nick Sposato. And who else?
Brendan Riley.
Yeah, looking out for that little guy. What was it? It was it wasn't even a one bedroom. He's renting out his...
Riley talked about people who made the investment in a studio apartment.
I'm telling you right now, everybody, never once in the history of the city of Chicago, hey, they looked out for the interest of studio apartment owners over large landowners. Just saying that, as soon as you hear an alderman going, I'm really concerned about the studio apartment owner, you know he's up to no good.
The next measure we're going to talk about, Ben, is something that was delayed. And there was another ordinance introduced to cause an ordinance to be delayed. And let me explain. Back in May 2019, over a year ago, the Chicago Landmarks Commission approved the creation of a historic landmark district in Pilsen. And this district would cover somewhere between 800 and 900 buildings. The way a landmark district works in Chicago is one of the first steps is the commission decides that, yep, this is an appropriate place. It meets the criteria for a historic landmark. And then it goes to the city council for codification. Well, that has to happen within 1 year of the commission doing that. Now, do you remember what happened in May of 2019 in terms of city government?
May of 2019, Lori Lightfoot became mayor of the city of Chicago.
As well as a bunch of aldermen. Yeah, well, it turns out that this particular landmark district was in the 25th ward. And who was alderman up until May of 2019?
Well, actually, technically, the answer to your question is nobody, because I believe the previous alderman, Alderman Danny Solis, was in the witness protection program. I don't know where he was. He was in hiding after it came out that he was wearing a wire on Ed Burke. Danny Solis stopped going to the city council meetings. All right. So I don't know if there was anybody. You and I've had this debate as to whether there was an alderman, because as you recall, the alderman who was coming in, we already played a quote for him, Byron Sixia Lopez, said he was against approving the 78 TIF district. And he was really the closest thing you had to an alderman, but he hadn't been sworn in yet. The previous alderman, Danny Solis, as I said, had disappeared. To answer your question, there was no alderman, really, in April of 2019. Danny Solis was alderman in name only.
My point in bringing that up is we could surmise that the degree to which there was aldermanic involvement in the creation of this historic landmark district, it was under Solis and presumably had his, I don't know, blessing. So anyway, going back to the creation, as I said, that was in May of 2019, and the thing had to be approved by the city council within 1 year. So what happened is at the July 21st zoning committee meeting, which was the day before this recent city council meeting, the planning department introduced a new ordinance, which for those keeping score is 0-2020-3993, that extended the time needed for city council approval of the landmark district by 6 months. And the zoning committee approved that, went before the city council the next day, which approved that delay. We're going to hear from the aforementioned Alderman Byron Sixia Lopez of the 25th Ward reacting to that, and let's hear it.
Page 9 contains a direct introduction to the committee to permit the further consideration of a proposed Pilsen Landmark District. I move passage of this item by the same motion if there is no objection.
Chairman, hold on. Hold on, sir. Please, we actually do things in an orderly fashion. I see your hand raised. I will call on you. The chair recognizes Alderman Sixia Lopez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do certainly hope that we do things in the council in an orderly fashion, because that's not really what happened in this extension of the landmark proposal in the 25th Ward without consultation with my office. And that sets a horrible precedent in terms of how we want to engage our community with a due process. So I just want to make sure that it is clear on record that I was forced with no option to vote on an extension that could have tremendous implications, especially for homeowners. The experiment that the administration tried to rush and to push in my community is simply unacceptable. To not be given even the choice to introduce a substitute, it is also reprehensible. After multiple attempts to have a decent process concerns me. To have the administration back a plan that came from my predecessor, and we all know the scandals before me, but to have this almost forced and imposed on my community is not acceptable. The only reason why we could not kill this proposal is because of parliamentary maneuvering and the shameful tax of the past. Those tactics, I hope that they're condemned and they're no longer part of our council. It is reprehensible to be blindsided. Not only my office was blindsided, but also my community and my stakeholders. 95% of my constituents signed affidavits, sealed affidavits against this proposal. Where's the democracy now? Right now we have seniors, low-income families who have to go in front of Landmark Commission and hire architects. We put 800 homeowners at risk because the responsibility of this administration. I'm no longer going to accept those kind of practices, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, sir. Alderman Lopez, you are very well aware that members of my administration spent countless hours trying to engage you. There was a robust community engagement process before you were elected, and that continued after you were elected. And as I well know, and you know, the committee chairman himself also spent a considerable time with you. The purpose of this 6 month extension is to allow for continued engagement, sir. This is not blindsiding. This is not anything other than trying to give you plenty of time and your community plenty of time to be heard instead of allowing this act to go into effect without any further discussion. I take great umbrage to the suggestion that you were blindsided or anyone in your community was, given the enormous amount of time that Chairman Cox and other members of the Department of Planning, as well as the chairman, have spent with you. You may not be happy, but to suggest that somehow this was sprung on you is simply not correct. And the record clearly speaks otherwise. Chairman Tunney.
I wanted to note for my committee members that the vote was unanimous, including Cicho Lopez, to extend this tolling ordinance. We spent, as you said, probably 3 hours on this one issue.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to clear the record.
Alderman, you don't blurt out. We have rules of order. You raise your hand. I will recognize you. But please, sir, conduct yourself with a modicum. Since it's your second time to be heard on the same motion just today, in addition to the time that we spent on committee, I will grant you a short amount of time.
And I'll be very brief because it's important to clarify the record. Yes, indeed, Mayor, there was a one-year process where we already decided my community. Unilaterally, there was a decision to extend that and not give me any option. And your process was to give me days, 2 days. I was notified of this on Friday, and the vote was on Tuesday. You may have been missing some of the briefings, so I hope that the Commissioner Cox tells you a little bit about the process. A year process and a six-month extension where low-income residents and homeowners now have to spend six more months in front of the Landmark Commission.
I want to point out a couple things that Alderman Cicho Lopez said. One is that he said that 95% of his constituents signed affidavits opposing this landmark district. If true, that is a pretty remarkable community consensus on opposing this thing. Secondly, he talked about the fact that he was given notice of this extension ordinance, in other words, to continue contemplation of the landmark district, on a Friday when the zoning committee meeting, which was considering this, was the following Tuesday. So he said he got 2 days. So those are both pretty remarkable things. Also, just as a point of detail, the relevant committee is the Committee on Zoning and Landmarks, which is chaired by Alderman Tom Tunney of the 44th Ward, who we heard speaking there a little bit.
This is an old-fashioned neighborhood news type story that I wrote all the time in the 90s. I was really impassioned by the debate over landmark districts and landmarking in general. This also has overtures about alderman and prerogative, a favorite topic of the two of us when we get together on this show. Also, let's just point out, you just got finished saying that Mayor Lori Lightfoot doesn't want to intervene. And here is a classic case of Mayor Lori Lightfoot intervening.
I just want to say that I edited it because it was kind of a long clip. I took out the part where she said, I normally don't. But she asked Chairman Tunney if she may make a remark, so she didn't, in fact, say that.
Okay, for the record, let the record stipulate that. Dennis has this bit that he loves to play where Mayor Lori Lightfoot is talking about cars. I'll take your car. I'll shut your car down. And she goes on these riffs, and it's just like, she really reminds me of Mayor Richard M. Daley in so many ways, more than she does of Rahm. And I think that speaks to her popularity. People in this city loved Richard Daley, and I think they love Lori Lightfoot. Chicagoans find something endearing about a mayor who lectures them and gets frustrated. Oh, Dennis wants to play. Why don't we play? Listen to it.
I won't just turn the car around. I'm going to shut it off. I'm going to kick you out, and I'm going to make you walk home.
Don't mess with Mayor Lori. What? That'll make you walk home. You know, I can't remember what the drivers were doing. They got her so mad.
This had to do with people paying attention to COVID-19 precautions. And I must confess, I have read that multiple times, but I've never heard it.
All right, they're coming from bars or whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
So going back, I wish she had taken the opportunity to chastise the aldermen where they were just blatantly and willfully being ignorant about the terms of that tenant protection bill that they passed. Remember where they said they're looking out to protect owners of two flats when two flats are exempted from the bill. I wish we had seen that Lori Lightfoot going, if you continue to misrepresent the facts on this bill, I'm going to take your car and I'm going to sell it to the city pound.
It's a slightly different point in that Sixto Lopez was accusing the administration of blindsiding him. Whereas in the previous example, aldermen were just getting the facts of the ordinance wrong.
They were being willfully ignorant about a piece of legislation that Lori Lightfoot helped create. And you would think she would stand up for the legislation that she created and supported as much as she wanted to stand up for her hurt feelings. Listen, she's got something personal against Byron Sixto Lopez. We all know it. He irritates the hell out of her. Probably not as much as Raylo, but right there.
So what I want to know is, what is really going on here? Sixto Lopez claims that he was blindsided because he got a copy of this extension ordinance a couple days before the committee meeting, whereas Lightfoot is pretty adamant. Her choice of words was interesting, too. She said our commissioner, the planning commissioner, Maurice Cox, worked to make contact with you, like spent time trying to make contact with you. Her exact words were not working with you, but trying to work with you. So was the planning department running around Sixto Lopez? Or is it that he is email challenged? They didn't get the memos or the messages saying, hey, can we talk? You know, I'll just add one more thing, Ben. I have spoken to other aldermen who say that the former is their experience with the planning department, because the planning department under the Lightfoot administration created a sort of distributed regional as opposed to centralized planning effort where they assigned particular planners to work within communities so they could sort of customize their planning. And I talked to, well, for one, Ninth Ward Alderman Anthony Beal, who said when the city was looking to create a special investment zone on South Michigan Avenue near Pullman, he said, well, yeah, Commissioner Cox talked with me, and then the planning department seemed to go off and do whatever the heck they wanted. They didn't talk to me again.
To the point you just raised, Lori Lightfoot and her administration made clear way back when in May of 2019 that alderman and prerogative was a thing of the past. And so in this particular instance, the notion that a landmark district of the size of the one that's proposed for the 25th Ward, with the impact that would have on property owners in that ward, the notion that that could advance this far without the alderman being directly involved, holding hearings in the community, working with planning department officials, it would be preposterous in the old days. So to the point that Anthony Beal is making and Byron Sixto Lopez has made, he's come on the show and has said the same thing, Dave, that you're saying now. There is a new day, for better or for worse, I believe worse, in Chicago, where there is not as much direct involvement between the planning department and the local alderman. We've heard that countless times. That's a theme that has come up time and time again with the declaration that alderman and prerogative is over. So that's a constant theme. There's two issues here. One is the substantive issue, and one is sort of the procedural issue. The procedural issue has to do with, did Cecil Lopez get enough notice? Was he brought in enough? Was the community represented? Is there transparency, et cetera? And then there's the substantive issue. What is the impact of such a landmark commission on homeowners, on property owners? We just heard this debate where they were say they were looking out for the interests of two flats and three flat owners, the ma and pa, right? Well, I was wondering, where were the advocates for just ordinary homeowners in Pilsen? When you put a landmark district in a residential area like this, you limit what property owners can do with their property. You also may limit the amount of money that you can sell. If there's a landmark ordinance that prohibits you from tearing down your property, you can't do teardowns and build up a bigger unit.
And as Sixto Lopez pointed out, if you want to make a change, you've got to perhaps hire an architect to make sure that it conforms to the landmark requirements of, say, your facade. So it adds expense to your point. So we move on?
Yes, let's move on.
One of the things that happened during the city council meeting, which happens quite often, is the finance committee makes recommendations to the council to approve settlements that the law department wants to make with people who have sued the city. There was a particular settlement that came up, which is the case of a gentleman named Charles Green, who sued the Chicago Police Department, alleging that he was sentenced to life in prison based on a coerced confession. The law department came up with a $500,000 settlement. But during the course of this lawsuit, one of the things that Green wanted is he wanted records from the police department showing the discipline history of officers who were involved. And it looked like if he reached the settlement with the city such that there was no finding of fault by either party, the city would essentially say that, oh, we don't have to release these disciplinary records. At the same time, there was recently a court decision that involved a suit that a number of parties were bringing against the city to cause the city to not destroy police disciplinary records, which is something that is required by the police officer union, the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge 7 contract. It says that disciplinary records of police officers older than 5 years must be destroyed. And so it was a pretty big deal that this court decided that, nope, those must be retained and then should be made public. So what we're going to hear now is we're going to hear a report by the Finance Committee Chair, Alderman Scott Wagaspak of the 32nd Ward, who is going to talk about what they're going to do around this settlement with Green. And let's hear what he had to say.
Item number 4 consists of 2 orders authorizing Corporation and Council to enter into and execute a settlement in the cases of Manuel Berrios, that's 4A, and 4B, Charles Green. I will be separating the votes on 4A and B. For item 4B, this matter will be held in committee. Madam President, thank you for speaking with me earlier. I wish to point out that you are giving Alderman more time to read the documents for us to address this matter and for the ordinance that I did send to all of my colleagues last night regarding the public database of CR's creation to be discussed. I think it will allow time to read the ordinance for this public database and prepare for discussions on it at the earliest possible date and hopeful passage this fall.
So I imagine what Chairman Wagaspak was talking about, this ordinance for a public database, was a surprise to anyone who wasn't an alderman, or maybe some of the aldermen who had got an email from him at midnight the night before, just speculating here. The ordinance he's talking about is O2020-3999. And it provides for the development of a public database showing closed or old complaints against police officers. Wagaspak says that he circulated it to aldermen. This ordinance, if we look online, we'll see it's sponsored by him and by the chairman of the Public Safety Committee, Alderman Chris Talafiero of the 29th Ward. Apparently, the city decided that it is not going to try to pull a fast one and limit access to these records of police complaints. In fact, what essentially Wagaspak is announcing is that he is proposing and Talafiero is proposing that there's actually a database built online that people can publicly access to get these records. I'll make one more point, Ben. There actually already is an online repository of this stuff, and it's privately run by an outfit called the Invisible Institute. They have what they call the Citizens Police Data Project, where they actually did Freedom of Information Act requests for police complaint records going back a number of years, and they stuck it all in a database, and our listeners can go to cpdp.co and look up a police officer's name and see their disciplinary record.
So the material is already there, as you pointed out, to a certain degree. It's just not in the official city website.
Well, it's also not updated.
Yeah, I was going to say, would it be updated on a regular basis?
The Invisible Institute just got essentially a snapshot, and that's what's in the database.
Listen, this struggle, this ongoing struggle to deal with age-old issues of police abuse in largely Black communities, it's going to be with us. The pandemic will be over. We will have a shot for the pandemic, and it's still be going on. Dave, this is just part of the DNA in the city of Chicago, and this is part of that ongoing struggle. And it's very upsetting to police officers that their records would be available to the public. They think it could be misleading in many instances, and it's equally frustrating to many residents of the city of Chicago that the city has an agreement with the Fraternal Order of Police to conceal many of these records. So I don't know if it's going to get resolved in negotiations. My guess, no. It'll be resolved, Dave, in lawsuits like this. The city kind of stumbled here in some ways, and that is part of the reason why Charles Green and his lawyers were able to prevail in this particular suit.
I should point out on the city clerk's website that does all the tracking of legislation for this particular ordinance for the public database of police complaints. It's shown that it will be introduced in September. So Wagasbeck is giving himself a little breathing room there.
As we speak, Scott's typing away in his basement.
Well, this last bit I have doesn't have to do directly with legislation, but it's an interesting insight into how the city works. Towards the end of the meeting, the mayor announced that someone in the mayor's office was leaving the employment of city government. And this woman's name is Tiffany Sostrin, S-O-S-T-R-I-N. She's listed in city records, because I looked it up, as an assistant director in the mayor's office. And she works for a part of the mayor's office called IGA, or Intergovernmental Affairs. For the purposes of helping me set this up, Ben, might you tell our listeners how IGA became infamous during the Daley administration?
Oh, my goodness. Were we doing the show, our old podcast, when that?
I think it was after that.
It was right after, Mayor Daley's Office of Advisors. They were doctoring the application records of people who were seeking employment in the city so that the favored few who had been recommended by the inside sources would get the first shot at the jobs. It was one of the many scandals of the Daley era as a whole, but between 2003 and 2007 was one of the most corrupt 4 years, I would say, in the last 50 years of the city of Chicago. There were so many, there was lawsuits having to do with the Duffs. I don't even remember that one, but that was a minority front scandal. There was the hired truck scandal. Anyway, this is the one where the mayor's aides were doctoring the employment process to make sure that the clouded few got the jobs.
So under that set of circumstances, the Intergovernmental Affairs Department was kind of the, the clot of clout, perhaps you could call it, so that if an alderman, for example, wanted to make sure that their sister-in-law's brother needed a job, they would call up IGA and say, can you make sure this happens? And a couple people who worked for IGA actually went to prison because of this corruption. So fast forward to 2020, we still have that department, IGA. They are responsible for doing things like negotiating on the part of the administration with city council, sort of liaise, if you will, with the city council, and with other non-city of Chicago entities like the Board of Education and Park District. So what we're going to hear is the mayor announcing that this woman, Ms. Sostrin, was leaving city employee. She's actually going to the Park District. And that prompted a whole bunch of accolades by the alderman. And let's hear it.
I want to recognize somebody that I know many of you know well and have worked with, and that's Tiffany Sostrin. This is her last city council meeting. She'll be moving on to bigger and better things. But we want to say thank you and give her a moment to say goodbye to members of the council.
Hi, everyone. It's been wonderful. I'll miss you.
Mayor, don't we get to say anything? This is Alderman Spisato.
Yes, no. The chair recognizes in order Alderman Taylor.
I appreciate you putting your time and your energy into working with me, which I'm sure was not easy, but you are definitely going to be missed.
Alderman Spisato.
Tiffany, I think we all can agree you're awesome. You're just a pleasure to work with. You're just a sweet gal, and you're always there for me.
Alderman Lopez.
Tiffany, it's a pleasure to know you professionally and personally.
Alderman Haddon.
Tiffany, it's been a pleasure getting to know you and work with you. Can't say enough great things.
Alderman Vasquez.
Tiffany, I want to thank you so much as a member that had just got into the council a little bit over a year ago. Really being able to have conversations with you and to be thought partners, even when we don't agree on issues, was really appreciated.
Alderman Lespada.
Tiffany, it's just been a pleasure. You bring such kindness and generosity and warmth to this work, and it stinks that we're going to be losing you.
Alderman Scott.
I definitely appreciate you, appreciate the conversations that we've had.
Alderman Harrison.
Tiffany, I don't know what I'm going to do with my evenings now that I will not be chatting with you or early in the morning.
Alderman Smith.
Tiffany, you're a great lawyer. And I was so thrilled when you joined the Lightfoot administration in a major role. You have been a tremendous leader.
Alderman Sedlowski Garza.
Tiffany, this is with a heavy heart. I don't know. I'm happy that you're going to a new role, but I'm also really sad. You've become my friend, my confidant, at times my rock this past year. I'm going to miss you.
Alderman Napolitano.
Tiffany, you're simply one of the best. Absolute pleasure to work with.
Alderman Wagstaff.
Tiffany Soskrin is a person that has the professional credentials that the city needs. It's good to see that she's going over to the Park District, but I know that Alderman and staff will miss her greatly.
Alderman Burnett.
Tiffany, we've always been impressed. Reggie over here crying right now. He's going to miss you so much. You've been so helpful to our office over the years.
Alderman Irvin.
Tiffany, Tiffany, Tiffany. Oh, what fun we had.
Alderman Dow.
I hope I can get through this, Tiffany. I think you have really blossomed in your role. And I'm glad the mayor tapped you for IGA. You're thoughtful, you're dedicated and straightforward. And we thank you for the encouragement that we were uncomfortable with. Thank you.
Alderman Harris.
Tiffany, my other little baby. I call you my little daughter.
Alderman King.
What I appreciated when you came to your new role in IGA is you remained very humble. I appreciate your honesty, your directness, especially on difficult issues.
Alderman Curtis.
Tiffany, I told you, we talked about you leaving. I don't want to leave.
Alderman Sergio Lopez.
Thank you, Tiffany. I always find you to be always very respectful and helpful.
Alderman Osterman.
Tiffany, really want to thank you for your leadership over the last few months. I think we're doing this tribute via Zoom, and I think you might have set up the first Zoom call with some of the aldermen.
Alderman Rodriguez.
Tiffany, I'm really going to miss the conversations, the late night conversations or the early evening conversations.
Alderman Riley.
I've had the pleasure of working in and around government for 25 years or so, and I've been fortunate to work with a lot of very talented people. And I can tell you, you're towards the top of that list.
Tiffany, as I reflect on being in office a little bit more than a year and knowing how much of that's been consumed by COVID and the sort of instrumental role you've played in literally helping to keep our government functioning, that work has been invaluable.
I know that was a little long, but it actually went on much longer. Ben, would you care to venture a guess for how long they talked about Tiffany?
I don't want to make it. I've never met Tiffany. I don't know Tiffany, but I bet it went on for an hour.
That is generous. It was half an hour.
Okay.
Which is not a record, right? Because I don't know if you recall, but when Hamilton closed, the theater play Hamilton, they praised the lead actor who was at city council for 40 minutes.
Okay.
So she didn't quite rate that. So think of some of the things that people said about her, like LaSpada talked about her kindness and generosity. Vasquez talked about that she was a thought partner with him. And I thought, this person is leaving the Lightfoot administration, which already has arguably challenges with some of the aldermen in terms of, you know, feeling like they're collaborative. So I'm really curious, like, why is she going and what went on there? These are questions.
Listen, I don't pretend to be a follower of the Palace Guard. It never was. I never paid attention to this level, you know, of like who's in and who's out. Generally, my rule of thumb is like I try to see what interests are being served. So, for instance, on that landlord, go back to that landlord, which is so illustrative of so much of the city council. They were probably looking out for the best interests of large property owners, but they were saying they were doing it on behalf of the small property owners. So that's the kind of thing I'm concerned about. I have no idea. She sounds so valuable. Why are they letting her go to the park district?
Well, it's a really intriguing question.
Maybe she said, I had enough. I cannot take you. Maybe the other side is Tiffany telling them, I got to be up all night listening to you complain. I got to listen to this alderman. Badmouth that alderman and that alderman badmouth. So who knows what's going on? Maybe Tiffany said, I've had enough.
And she's clearly having plenty of late night conversations too.
Yeah, because she's trying to round up the votes.
Ben, that's all I've got today.
Very good. That was a nice little touch at the end because it gives people an idea. A lot of times you're highlighting the contentious debates that happen, and they are the most entertaining in many ways, or the most illuminating. But if you really want to know what consumes so much of the time at a city council meeting, it's things like the tribute. I'm going to just say, I'm sure she's a wonderful employee. So let us also praise Tiffany. Best of luck to you with the Park District. I've never met you. I don't know you, but I wish you the best of luck. And now you won't have to be up late listening to alderman complaints. So you're actually a lucky person. How about that, Dave? Did I say it well?
I want to guess what her salary is.
I'll say $150,000.
You're a little high.
Oh. Well, that's not the first time someone's accused me of that.
It's legal now. $129,000. I looked it up.
Oh, okay. Very good. Tiffany, I'm sure you deserve it. Best of luck to you. And this man here, Dave Glowatz, should be getting $129,000 a year for the outstanding work he does whenever he chronicles the city council's exploits. There won't be another meeting until September, did you say?
I didn't say, but that's true.
I think you did say that at one point. And you forgot that you said.
Let's play the tape back.
All right.
I won't just turn the car around. I'm going to shut it off. I'm going to kick you out, and I'm going to make you walk home.
That's Mayor Lori Lightfoot talking to Dave Glowatz one night.
That's all we've got for this episode, listeners. As always, we welcome your questions and comments and your suggestions for future interviews. You can get those to us via email, contact@shigov.com. That's CHIGOV.com. On Facebook, get to us at facebook.com/insidegov. That's inside G-O-V. And finally, on Twitter, our handle is @CHIGOVT. I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.